Good evening, everyone, and welcome
to another issue
of The Summoner. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. My website is galleryofthemind.com. Please check it out if you have the time. Also, if you want to contact me, my email address is webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. Again, that's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. All right, on with the show.
This is the story of a group called the Warriors. They are blessed by the ancestors. The ancestors' light shines through them as a power of light. The light, the shine, can be varied a bit, which slightly changes the power. The Warriors use their power to protect their people on the planet Artonia in the Yellow Realm. Their tales are spellbinding adventures just beyond the reach of even imagination. Among these warriors is one even more unique. He is unique because he is half human. He is called the Summoner, and these are his tales.
Issue 33, Invisible Eyes. The wind howls, and there is darkness everywhere. Flashes of lightning break the darkness, followed by the tremendous bouts of thunder. It is not what one would expect on the planet Artonia. But this is the Artonia that Michael knew. It is the alternate reality that Michael is from. Specifically, it is above the island where Dr. Ibrahim had his facility to find ways to defeat the Dark Ones. In the clouds, looking over the dark, dark ocean, is a warrior. It is the Summoner. He doesn't understand how he has gotten here, and he doesn't know where he is. He doesn't get the chance to ask himself as a swarm of Dark Ones move under a cloud and go straight to the island.
Those were the Dark Ones. How did they not see me? Wait, the bigger question is, how can I be floating on a cloud? I must be dreaming. Or could this be... Amy! Amy! Are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Then I'm not dreaming. Amy, is that Scepter Island?
Yes.
Then this is Artonia. What's happened?
Calm down. This is the past of Michael's reality.
What? How did I get here?
Because you have not taken your therapy in quite a while. You know that you shouldn't go on this long without it.
I have not been back to Artonia. I was kidnapped twice.
Excuses don't change facts. You have not taken your therapy. And now your soul is sometimes not centered on your body.
But this is different. It should only happen in two ways. But I am not shining, and I have not traveled to barrier.
Are you sure one of those isn't true?
How can I be sure? I remember that I was with the generals and the leader, Uro, of the known Reba.
Yes, that is right.
Then there was some kind of explosion, and the roof fell in. I must have been knocked unconscious. So, I just need to wake up.
Right again.
But I am not dreaming. And I know that I am not shining. That means that Barrier is here?
You're on a roll, big brother.
That doesn't make sense. How can Barrier be in an alternate reality? And how can he be in the past of an alternate reality?
Amy shrugs.
Where is he?
Amy points to the island. The Summoner and Amy move closer. There is a flurry of activity around Dr. Ibrahim's facility, with the Dark Ones moving around and with the possessed Artonians bombarding it. The summoner follows Amy's lead through the walls of the facility. The summoner notices that the lights are flickering.
Have the Dark Ones entered the facility?
There are some here.
Is Barrier in trouble?
Not yet. There he is, up ahead.
The summoner and Amy float forward a bit faster till they catch up to Barrier.
He is reading a piece of paper. How can he read in this light?
It's a map. He's following a map.
What is it, Amy? Are you okay?
I don't know. I feel like we're being watched. I feel scared.
A chill goes over the summoner. The summoner has never heard Amy say those words. Well, he has never heard her say those words since her death. A sound screeches out, all wince in fear, as a shadow passes over them. It is a shadow, but not a dark one. It is a large bird. Amy disappears. She has left the summoner. The summoner has never seen that happen before.
Amy! Amy, where are you?
There is no answer. He feels alone. But then he sees the Barrier is entering a room, and the summoner decides to follow. Barrier enters the room and sees a woman lying on the floor. He runs over to her.
Who is she? Barrier must know her. It's an Eblin woman.
The summoner watches Barrier try to wake her. The woman is not responding. Barrier picks her up off of the floor and carries her over to a chair. Suddenly, the woman begins to mumble. What she is saying is unintelligible. It is the Eben language.
Wanza itala some, inkara, some kara.
Carol, what are you saying? What are you saying?
An unseen voice begins repeating the words that Carol is saying. The two voices join in a kind of vibration that fills the room. The sound is getting louder and louder. The pauses almost seem to be in sync with the flickering lights. Barrier looks up as shadows of birds trace circles around him. They begin to cry. The noise and vibration that they make seem to join with the unseen voice and the voice of Carol. The door opens, and there is a bird standing there. The summoner is disoriented by all the chaos around him. He feels that he cannot think. Then he feels a familiar feeling again. It is Amy. She is standing beside him again.
Amy, what is going on? I feel like these vibrations are going right through me.
We have to go. We have to go.
Why? I don't want to leave Barrier.
The cries of the birds get louder and begin echoing off the walls of the room.
Yuki, we have to go now.
She pulls him as the bird that has just came in stares directly at the summoner and Amy.
Stop it, Amy. Stop. Amy, look at that bird. I think that it can see us.
They're everywhere. Those birds can see us. I am sure. Them and their invisible eyes. They've been watching us.
Suddenly, the bird points directly at the summoner and says, "No! No blue ants!" The sound from the bird's voice is as solid as a thick wave of water. It hits Amy and the summoner and drives them back. They go back through the walls of the room. They go back through the walls of the hallway. Then they go through the rooms at a roller coaster pace. Finally, they are driven out of the building. They are disoriented and amazed. They are even more dizzied by the frenzy of dark shapes flitting about. Then it is Amy that catches sight of another bit of movement. It is a little boy hiding in the trees. She points him out to the summoner. She points to the dark ones floating around him.
It's Herod. We have to do something now. He doesn't have a chance against those things.
The summoner heads over to him, but he knows that there is nothing he can do. The dark ones do not seem to see Herod, but they are drawn to this area because of the fear he is putting out as he shakes in a nearly insane manner.
Herod, Herod, can you hear me?
He knows that it is impossible, but he still calls to the boy, wanting to help. Herod looks and says,
"Yes."
The summoner is startled by the boy's response, but he is more surprised to see that the boy has one eye that is blood red, and the other is normal. With its answer, the dark ones start to swirl around him.
Amy, what is going on?
He is calling the dark ones, I think.
How?
There's a dark one in him, but somehow the dark one does not control him. He is able to fight.
Why can he fight? That's impossible. Amy, I'm starting to lose contact with this world. I'm starting to wake up.
We have to move away from all these dark ones.
They are somehow awakening me by weakening me. In a dream?
You know that this isn't quite a dream.
I can't leave him. I can't go.
Amy pulls the summoner further away. Herod starts to scream and cry. The frenzy of the dark ones seems to increase as the boy cries out.
I won't leave him. I'm going back.
The summoner finds that he cannot. He feels weak as his energy seems to be sapped. He watches the red eyes swirl faster and faster around Herod. The little boy's pleas hit a fever high pitch as the other dark ones are drawn to him.
No, please, no!
Then there's a wheeze sound and a flash of light. As the summoner's eyes recover from the flash, he sees that Herod is gone, along with the dark ones.
Where, Amy? Where did they go?
You know as well as I do. They went to our Artonia.
Next time, a victim of circumstance.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another issue of The Summoner. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. My website is galleryofthemind.com. Please check it out if you have the time. Also, if you want to contact me, my email address is webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. Again, that's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. All right, on with the show. This is the story of a group called the Warriors. They are blessed by the ancestors. The ancestors' light shines through them as a power of light. The light, the shine, can be varied a bit, which slightly changes the power. The warriors use their power to protect their people on the planet Artonia in the Yellow Realm. Their tales are spellbinding adventures just beyond the reach of even imagination. Among these warriors is one even more unique. He is unique because he is half human. He is called the Summoner, and these are his tales.
Issue 34, A Victim of Circumstance. The known Reba are soulless clones created by the Abernonians. Soulless does not mean bad people. Some are downright good, but then there are others that are like Dr. Vlad. All of his life, he has cared about nothing but himself. He has killed for nothing more than power. He creates weapons of mass destruction for the praise of others. He invariably made many powerful enemies. All of this has led to Vlad being completely paralyzed. He can only move because a warrior named Eleni shines a light that lets him do so. She allows him to move so that he can work on a robot and search for ways to fight against the formidable enemy that calls themselves the Dark Ones. And Vlad works because he has been given the promise of movement again. Vlad feels that he is a victim of circumstance. There are three more things that Vlad is. One is a coward. Two is a bully. And three is that he is diabolical. And because of those three things, he is about to make Eleni a victim of circumstance too. Vlad has guessed that Crone 8 has the ability to transfer souls across space because he put that ability into one of his machines. So Vlad orders Crone 8 to transfer Eleni's soul into himself.
Do it! Do it now!
Accessing.
What are you doing? I sense that there is something that you are trying to hide from me.
I am doing nothing. You are imagining things.
Eleni's soul and consciousness is thrust out of her body and into Dr. Vlad. She briefly screams as her body falls to the floor.
What has happened?
You are in my head now, and you will stay here while we watch your body die.
Eleni screams for her husband, but this time it is only inside Dr. Vlad's head.
Your husband cannot hear you. You are in my mind.
Someone will come and find me. Remember, I screamed. Someone will come.
Oh, yes, they will. In fact, here come some guards now. Can't you hear their hurried footsteps?
Eleni can hear them. She can even see them as they come into the room with their weapons drawn. But she cannot communicate with them. She cannot tell them what has happened.
Eleni's down. I cannot revive her. I'm alerting the medical services.
She was shining a long time. I've never seen anyone shine as long as she has.
Eleni's special. She has always been able to do these marathon shines. She's kind of famous for that. It has never affected her before.
What about this Dr. Vlad? Could he have done something?
Look at him. He cannot even move. He is paralyzed without her.
Let's see what happened here.
Accessing one of the computers, he plays back a video of the events in the room. The guards watch as two paramedics rush into the room.
Eleni's there. This recording shows her collapse.
She was suspicious of Dr. Vlad.
But he'd made no move towards her. She just collapsed.
The doctor is examining Alini with a very worried look on his face. He doesn't understand why she has collapsed. He does realize that he is going to have to get her to a medical facility to keep her alive and study her more. So he orders his paramedics to gather her body. One of the guards walks over to Dr. Vlad, and he thumps the doctor's nose.
Yep, he's paralyzed.
The two guards laugh as the pain of the hard thump resonates through Dr. Vlad's body.
I will get you for that.
You can't do anything. You cannot even move. And you're holding me hostage. Doesn't change anything.
Oh, but it does.
The doctor and the paramedics hurry out of the room.
You see, here I can hurt you. I can hurt you in ways you couldn't imagine.
Eleni starts to feel pain, like she is on fire. She screams, but cannot stop the agony. She writhes in ceaseless pain. She cries, but cannot express herself in tears. This is horror. There is not even the hope for death. Dr. Vlad laughs. He enjoys this so much. He almost cannot stop himself, but he does. Eleni is almost incoherent because the memory of the pain is still there.
Shall I start again? All it takes is a passing angry thought towards you.
Oh, please. Please don't do that again. Please have mercy.
Then you had better do what I say. If you don't, then you could upset me.
No, 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 I don't want to do that.
A wave of pain shoots through Eleni.
Ah! Oh, please, please.
I didn't believe your first answer, so I'll ask you again. Will you do what I say?
Yes, yes, I'll do whatever you say.
Let's test that. Kill him.
What? Who?
The guard that thumped my nose.
How can I do anything?
You can shine.
But I'm not in my body.
The shine doesn't rely on your body. It relies on the soul and the blood.
You do not have the blood of my people.
But it is still blood. Now stop stalling and shine.
How can I kill him? I can only make him move.
Make his heart move. Make it move faster.
I can't kill him.
A wave of pain shoots through Eleni.
Disobey me?
Please!
Do you think that I'm a nice guy? Do you think that I care if you plead to me? Do you think that I care anything about you? You don't matter. Nothing about you matters. You are nothing to me. You are just a lowly animal. You're filth. You should recognize my greatness.
The pain stops for her. Vlad's body begins to shine.
Whoa, I feel strange.
Are you about to fall out like Eleni did?
My heart is feeling strange. It's beating so hard.
Not funny, dude. I am not going to fall for your stupid jokes.
Vlad, I should stop. He will die.
That's the point. He upset me. Are you going to continue, or are you going to upset me too?
The guard falls to his knees. Now the other guard believes him, and he runs over to him. Then he catches a glimpse of the light. He sees that it is coming from Dr. Vlad. He looks wide-eyed at the doctor.
You're shining!
Please, we have to stop now.
Keep going.
Ugh! Ugh! I think I'm gonna die.
I think you are too.
No, you're not. I'm going to put an end to this.
He draws his gun and runs over to Dr. Vlad.
I know you're doing something. Stop it right now.
Doctor?
Keep going.
The guard looks over to his pale-looking partner.
Stop it! Stop it, I tell ya!
He sets the gun to kill.
Keep going.
I'm going to shoot!
The arm of the guard is grabbed by a metallic arm reaching out from the table. I cannot let you hurt my master. The robot is strong, but the guard struggles. He doesn't have a chance as the robot snaps his arm. The gun falls to the floor.
I think he's gonna die. I feel it. If I keep going, he's gonna die.
I know. Just keep going.
The guard struggles to get to the gun with his other hand, but he cannot reach it. He screams in pain one final time and then passes out. The other guard draws his gun. Then the guard fires.
Next time, here it comes now.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another issue of The Summoner. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. My website is galleryofthemind.com. Please check it out if you have the time. Also, if you want to contact me, my email address is webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. Again, that's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. All right, on with the show.
This is the story of a group called the Warriors. They are blessed by the ancestors. The ancestors' light shines through them as a power of light. The light, the shine, can be varied a bit, which slightly changes the power. The Warriors use their power to protect their people on the planet Artonia in the Yellow Realm. Their tales are spellbinding adventures just beyond the reach of even imagination. Among these warriors is one even more unique. He is unique because he is half human. He is called the Summoner, and these are his tales.
Issue 35, Here It Comes Now. Deep in the memories of Kelly, the last vestige of Kelly's personality remains. She is smiling for the first time in a while. She is smiling because of a little girl named Griselle. Griselle is not a memory, so Kelly does not really understand how she is here. She finds herself sometimes wondering if this could somehow be her imagination, or maybe it is some manifestation of Kelly herself. The little girl seems so autonomous that Kelly cannot bring herself to believe something like that. Griselle must originate outside of Kelly. But if she is from the outside, then who really is she? Is she some sort of evil alien playing tricks on Kelly? Or even more sinister, could she be one of the Dark Ones?
And there was a big fish that looks like this.
Griselle pulls out her cheeks
and pushes her ears forward. Her face seems to morph. She looks like a little monkey. Kelly's thoughts are broken as she laughs.
Griselle! Except it has kept an extra eye on top of its head.
Griselle points to the top of her head as she speaks.
Oh my, that is a strange fish. But it has a lovely name. Aberrone actually means cooperation in my language. Now why does it... It has an eye on top of its head. It can hunt birds. That's its hunting eye.
Griselle is giggling while telling the story. Kelly thinks that this girl seems to be too sweet to be something like one of the Darklings.
So, the bird swoops down, and the Aberrone fish swims to the top to meet the bird. Then, it shoots water in the bird's face.
Griselle sprays water out of her mouth, catching Kelly in the face.
So the bird catches, and the Aberrone fish tries to eat it.
Maybe this girl is exactly what she seems. Maybe she's just a weird, funny little girl.
Is that story true? Or did you make it up to spray water on me? I don't know.
Kelly knowingly smiles.
How could you not know?
The girl looks straight at Kelly.
Come with me, and I will show you how I could not know.
The words catch Kelly totally by surprise. Intrigued, Kelly follows the little girl. It is not really sure how far they walk, but Kelly notices that the scenery seems to be cycling around her. Her memories are flying all around her at an almost dizzying pace. She tries to recognize the mishmash of pictures. She can with some, but others are just unintelligible blurs. Kelly begins to laugh.
You're accessing my memories. It actually tickles.
The memories stop and a picture forms. Kelly looks around and her mouth opens wide.
I'll be you.
Griselle speaks with such enthusiasm and excitement in her voice.
Okay, Griselle, you can be me.
Griselle seems to morph her body and it becomes a younger Kelly. Kelly recognizes that she is on a space station that orbits the planet Dracia. She is about 80 years old, which is about 16 in human years. Kelly's father is an Abernonian, and her mother is of the known Reba. Their people are at war with each other, even though now it is just a cold war. But Kelly's parents overcame that. They fell in love and had a baby girl they named after Kelly's mother, Kalindra, and Kelly's father's sister, Ellie. Kelly's parents are here to study the dark rift that opened during a violent phase of the war, which was termed the Great War. The study has gone on for many years, just collecting the usual radiation coming from the rift, but today is different. Today is the day that two manned probes are returning from the Dark Rift. All communication with the manned probes has been lost for the past 3 days. But today is the day that they are due to return. So the deck of the space station is tense as everyone watches and scans for a sign of the ship emerging. Kelly remembers vividly how scared she was. She watches herself stare at the empty view screen. She sees how red her eyes were from crying and worrying. Her father was on that mission. Her mother touches her shoulder. Griselle is playing her well. The lights begin flickering. She hears the commander barking orders to fix the power. They have been having these power outages all day. No one seems to be able to track down their source. At that time, none of this made sense to anyone. It was just a malfunction of some sort. But now she realizes that it must have been the Dark Ones. Everything freezes.
That's right!
What's right? The Darkness were the ones behind the power problems. The Darkness reaching out from the rift was the Darkness. How did you know I was... Can you hear my thoughts? Well, kinda. Sometimes. I thought I told you not, but I am not eavesdropping on you. You were just loud with that thought. You should watch more.
The scene unfreezes. Finally, word comes that no ship has returned. Kelly watches the sad resignation in Griselle's eyes. Kelly's mother turns and runs off crying. Griselle just stands there for a moment. Then she too turns around and slowly heads for her quarters. She passes her co-workers, and she can hear some of them mumbling, "Sorry, sorry." Griselle does not make it to her quarters. Alarms start going off all over the space station. Kelly's mother runs to Griselle with a frantic look in her face. Everything freezes, and Griselle looks at Kelly.
See, Kelly? Do you remember this? These are my memories, so I must. Oh, yeah. Well, keep watching.
The scene unfreezes, and Griselle looks to Kelly's mother. The mother says that they have to get to the bridge now.
Are we under attack?
No, your father is. Griselle and Kelly's mother hurriedly make their way to the bridge.
Who is attacking him?
We don't know. Griselle comes back to the bridge and sees that there are two ships on the screen. There is a firefight going on between those two ships. One ship is badly damaged. Neither of those ships is recognizable.
You've got to help us! We're being attacked!
What is going on?
Kelly? Is that your voice?
Dad! Who's attacking you?
Jim.
Jim went on the mission with you. Why is he attacking?
I don't know. He has gone insane.
Weapons fire continues. Then everything freezes.
Wow, what a fight is going on. You have an interesting life. I wish my life was like this. I wish I could fight evil. Why did Jim attack your father? Do you remember?
It was never found out why. They tried to contact his ship, but communication had been totally wiped out. They just kept fighting out there. They were too far out for us to help or interfere. And our guard patrol ships were grounded. All those ships were reporting serious power malfunctions. Our power was fluctuating too. It was a crazy confluence of events. And then...
Then your father's ship damaged the propulsion system on Jim's ship.
Yes.
The scene unfreezes again. We got him. They're dead in the water. I'm going to try to make it to the station. Jim, if you can hear me, I hope you realize that I can destroy you now. But I'm not going to, my friend. True to his word, her father rushes toward the space station. His ship is damaged, too, so he cannot make good speed. After nearly an hour, the ship crawls back into the space station bay. Kelly's father is home. Griselle and Kelly stand in the bay, waiting to welcome him home. The door to the ship opens, and out walks seven individuals. Three of them are the men who left on this mission, and the other four are the emissaries from the Dark Rift. The guards that are there keep a watchful eye. The leadership of the space station wait patiently, watching and waiting to make the first diplomatic contact with the people from the Dark Rift. And Kelly's mother just rushes forward past everyone and wraps her relieved arms around her husband. Griselle joins them. The memory seems so real. Tears begin to flow from Kelly's eyes. Kelly has never been able to hide her emotions. She misses him so much. She misses both her parents.
Dad. Keep watching. Here comes the important part.
The happy, cordial delegation walk off in friendship. Greetings, questions, and gifts
are the topics of the moment. Kelly looks back at the ship. There's a hooded figure standing there. In his hand is a stick. It appears to be a crooked wand. No one seems to see him.
I don't remember seeing him. This didn't happen.
It did! And you do remember seeing him, even if your eyes couldn't see him. Your subconscious remembers seeing him.
The lights on the space station go completely out. The space station violently shakes under a series of terrible weapons fire. The space station becomes alive with action as men and women rush to their workstations to defend the ship. Grissel happens to be standing next to the commander. He has just gotten a bit of information.
Who did you say? Jim? Jim is attacking this space station?
He has gone mad. He would never attack us. And he is so outgunned that if he does, he will not last long.
Sir, all of our sensors are down and from the power drain. And the power drain is affecting all of our weapons. Our shields are buckling from the pounding and the power problems. So Jim may actually win this fight.
All of our sensors are down? Wait, what about the eye? The telescope at the top of the space station? Maybe it's still working. Its power source is totally separate from the rest of the ship.
Grissel makes her way to the bridge. When she gets there, she hears the lieutenant commander say that the commander was able to target Jim's ship using the telescope. But there were no weapons to fire. She also hears that Jim knows that the station is offensively dead. Jim has diverted almost all power from the shields to give his weapons the power needed to punch through the space station's shields and defensive plating. It's working.
Maybe we have a weapon. We've been collecting the mix of radiation coming from the rift. We sometimes have to expel it for various reasons. We could expel it directly at Jim's ship when he passes too close. It won't damage the ship, but it should penetrate the shields and kill everyone on board.
Grissel, this is your story.
The memory freezes.
Grissel, why are you stopping the memory? Here it comes! Here it comes now! What is coming?
Grissel looks at Kelly. A chilling sensation of fear washes over her. She knows that it is the Dark One. It is Belmast.
Next time, Belmast.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another issue of The Summoner. I am your host and writer, Walter Pierce. My website is galleryofthemind.com. Please check it out if you have the time. Also, if you want to contact me, my email address is webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. Again, that's webmaster@galleryofthemind.com. All right, on with the show.
This is the story of a group called the Warriors. They are blessed by the ancestors. The ancestors' light shines through them as a power of light. The light, the shine, can be varied a bit, which slightly changes the power. The Warriors use their power to protect their people on the planet Artonia in the Yellow Realm. Their tales are spellbinding adventures just beyond the reach of even imagination. Among these warriors is one even more unique. He is unique because he is half human. He is called the Summoner, and these are his tales.
Issue 36, Belmast. Belmast is unfamiliar with this world. He has been around for a long time, but he is from a different reality. In his reality, the planet Reba was overrun by his kind. In this reality, only two cities on the planet have fallen. He is in one of those cities watching the warrior Michael and a group of Garmaki try to escape. He doesn't really care. They will be caught. He just feeds off of the despair he felt off of them. It is time for him to leave. He is going to the Orange Realm, being led by another Dark One named Kunspar. A working doorway machine has been detected a short distance away. At the building where the doorway machine is located is a gathering of all the generals of the great cities of Reba. Many soldiers are there too, along with the supreme leader, Uro. They were in control of this building. They were holding their own against the afflicted monsters assaulting them. The unnatural darkness, too, seemed to be subsiding. They had even secured the old battle armor, which the afflicted could not penetrate. Although the new battle armor was more protective, it proved useless since it used lightweight force fields which continuously fail in the presence of the Dark Ones. Nonetheless, with the old battle armor and most of the zombies having been drawn away by the Summoner, you could actually say they were winning. But then the building semi-collapsed under the rain of debris coming from the ship destroyed in the skies overhead. Now many of the soldiers lie unconscious. Some lie trapped, crying in pain. The soldiers that are able to fight have their hands full, fighting for their lives because the afflicted are returning to the building. They have been drawn by the noise. Uro stands at the center of all the chaos. He calmly directs the soldiers, but he too knows that the soldiers are losing ground. He knows that they are about to be overwhelmed. They are already encircled. When it seems that things cannot possibly get worse, that is when Kelly and Belmast arrive. Belmast brings the howling winds with him. He cannot help it. There is so much pain and desperation here that he cannot help but to exude darkness. It expands over the soldiers. Fear increases, and then the darkness increases again. Uro realizes that they cannot hold this building, and yet he knows that there is no escape from it without help. That is when the doctor limps over to him.
They're coming in from everywhere. What can we do?
Your city, the eighth great city. Is there any sanctuary there?
I do not know.
Well, we know that there is no sanctuary here. How did you get the doorway machine working? Ours seems to have no energy.
I did it. I'm just a doctor.
You were there. You must know something.
Everything has been so crazy. I don't remember. I can't remember.
Doctor, this is a very bad time to have a lapse of memory.
He orders two of his men to get the doorway machine operational.
We had a generator. The generator put out enough energy to get the doorway machine functional.
Unfortunately, we do not have a generator.
There must be somewhere where we can get one.
There are. But unfortunately, They are not in this building. And to go out of this building means going through those creatures. I do not have enough men to fight our way out of this building.
The soldiers with the battle armor could go. They could get the generator.
Those are the men faring the best against these zombies. I can't spare them.
If they don't go, then we are going to be overwhelmed anyway. Look over there. There is a fallen soldier that is wearing battle armor.
Luro motions to his personal bodyguards.
See that fallen soldier? Get over there and bring his body here.
The soldiers obey, and they bring back the body in a short period of time.
You, Krito, take that armor and go to my ship and bring back the portable generator.
The soldier quickly puts on the armor. Then he runs to the hordes of the zombies. He does not make it. He gets to a certain point out of the building, and the numbers overwhelm him. They form a sea of bodies, and the soldier sinks into it. Luro and the doctor watch. They see the soldier fall and their hearts sink. Then the lines that the soldiers hold break. First, it is only one hold. Then, as the afflicted surround other soldiers, the line of the soldiers completely collapses. The soldiers quickly regroup around Luro and the doctor.
To the east. Fight to the east. We may be able to break our way through the afflicted there.
Luro is right. The soldiers are able to get through the wall of zombies at that point. But the cost is high. Only a handful of soldiers make it through. Luro, the doctor, and the remaining three soldiers are being chased by seemingly the whole city. Coonspar, along with Belmast, via Kelly's body, wades through the afflicted. They go straight to the doorway machine. Coonspar draws away the darkness from the machine. He draws it into himself. The doorway machine comes to life. It is able to get the energy that it needs to work. Kelly sets the machine to open a doorway into the orange realm. Unnoticed by all, the summoner wakes up as his spirit slams back into his body. He was knocked unconscious by a stone from the collapsing building. He has just returned from an alternate reality. He is hit by worry as he returns because of the events he saw there. He quickly forgets as he looks around and sees the clear and present danger. The afflicted are all around, moaning. There are sparse numbers of them because most are giving chase to Uro's group. But fear shoots through the summoner. Out of the corner of his eye, he does see the orange door. The light attracts his vision. The door has turned orange, and Kelly walks through it. The summoner grabs the piece of debris from the building that knocked him out. Then he pops up and runs for the door. Now the afflicted notice him. They start moving towards him as he moves to the door. The hideous afflicted try to get him, but he beats them away or dodges them as he tries to make it to the light. He makes it to the door, but the door is already closed by the time he gets there.
No!
But that is not the worst of it. The red eyes of Coonspar are focused on him. Coonspar moves to enter the summoner. The summoner shines instinctively and immediately. Coonspar seems to bounce off of its light.
My shine is blocking you. But the afflicted are coming.
Coonspar begins surrounding the summoner with darkness. The summoner then hears gunfire. It is approaching him. It is the soldier that Uro sent to get the generator. The soldier has actually been successful. Even though he was surrounded in the afflicted,
they could not penetrate his armor. He was eventually able to crawl on the ground and make it to the ship, where he secured the generator. He has returned looking for Uro, but Uro is not here. With the summoner surrounded by the unnatural darkness, he is out of the sight of the soldier and of the afflicted. The afflicted focus on the lone soldier.
I am feeling weaker. My light is being put out. I have to do something quickly. But what can I call? There are no animals to call. There is not an element that can hurt the dark ones.
Call spirits.
Amy? That won't work. The known Reba do not have souls.
Just call.
The summoner's shine turns gold. He calls the ones who have died on this planet. He shines, but nothing comes. But that does not mean that nothing happens. The light seems to burn the darkness. It cries a strange, reverberating howl as it flees from around the summoner. Its red eyes show fear as it pulls its mist away. It flees into the air, knowing that there is no one to come to its aid. The summoner picks up one of the guns that litter the ground and begins to shoot the afflicted surrounding the soldier. The soldier is now able to fight back too. Together, they clear the afflicted in the general area. The soldier runs over some equipment that is near a doorway machine. He starts hooking the generator to it while the summoner just fires at the monsters that are attracted by the noise. The soldier opens a box that he got off of the ship and pulls out grenades. He starts tossing them, causing explosions all around, clearing out the afflicted. Unfortunately, it attracts more too. They are further away, but they are coming in large numbers from all directions. In the Orange Realm, Belmas finds himself on a planet called Hera. He is in a field surrounded by hills and trees. He hears the clicking of weapons from all around.
Come out!
Who are you?
I'm here to help you defeat your enemies.
You have answered my call, but not my question.
You have answered my call, but not my beckon. Are you afraid of a woman that stands here with no weapon?
We are not! From their hidden positions come 10 men.
My name is Jeremy. Now who are you, and why do you invade our lands through the door?
Thomas? I want to speak to your leader, Thomas Taylor.
Laughter goes through the men. Jeremy is not amused, though. He walks over to Belmast, puts his gun directly to Belmast's head.
Who are you?
My name is Kelly. I am of the known Reba.
Many of the men cry out to kill her.
That would not be wise, because you are afraid. I can feel it in you.
Again, the voices cry out to kill the known Reba. Jeremy lowers his gun.
You are either brave or extremely foolish.
I've come to ease your fears. You detected my arrival. You detected the doorway. So you are monitoring for the opening.
There is no way to monitor for doorway openings.
Don't lie. Look at these soldiers surrounding the place where the doorway opened. The known Reba can detect doors opening. And so can you.
Are you some kind of spy? We will kill the ones that come here through the doors.
I can get you a doorway.
Belmas turns to the side. He begins talking to himself, and his voice changes to that of Belmast.
What is this? What are you doing, Kelly? I'm cut
coming for you. I am coming for you.
The soldiers were silent as they watched the seemingly insane Bellmast. Next time, let's bounce.